Nothing tastes as good as a cup of Bahamian tea. Ah.
The views and opinion expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entity or organizations.
You are listening to the podcast Tea and Talk, presented to inform, educate, inspire, and encourage meaningful conversations on Bahamian art and culture. My name is Robert Bain, dancer, teacher, choreographer, and someone who believes in the preservation of all things Bahamian. I am sitting down with persons of like mind to discuss the Bahamian perspective on the arts and the Bahamian way. Now, let's welcome our guest.
Well, hello, hello. This is Robert Bain coming to you with another podcast. A podcast emanating from Nassau, Bahamas, one of the islands of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. We boast of 700 islands, you know, and 30 of them are inhabited by beautiful people. Here in the Bahamas, man, there are lots and lots of possibilities, you know. And this podcast was established to help the artists in the country to have a platform, to have a voice, you know. And hopefully at the end of this podcast, I hope that everybody listening will be much smarter. The music you heard in the beginning is music done by Jason Ferguson. And the music you hear playing underneath is by local artist Fred Ferguson. Today we have a special guest. As of course all guests that come on Tea and Talk, they're very special because they have something special to say. Matter of fact, let me say that we're being heard in 15 countries around the world, and I thank you for listening. So we're not going to hold this up. We're going to get right to it. We're going to get it done. Today in studio we have none other than Nicolette Bethel, somebody I've known for a very, very long time. The relationship started through her father, mm-hmm. E. Clement Bethel. Nico, welcome to Tea and Talk.
Thank you, Robert. It's nice to be here, finally.
Finally. We've been trying to hook this up.
You're so half, eh?
You are so busy, man.
I am right now.
It's yeah. Don't kill us. But no, that's all right. It's important because for many years, man, it started from your dad, E. Clement Bethel. Everybody should know who he is because his contribution is like, we can't put it in context of how much. We can't find the adjective. But he is a Bahamian icon. He's written lots of stuff. He wrote Sami Swain and a bunch of other things he's done. He has conducted lots of choirs. And he's our first trained ethnomusicologist.
Correct. Right? Correct. Yeah. Okay.
And Mr. Bethel is one of the persons that's responsible for having me be back in the Bahamas.
And that's how we met, through Sami Swain.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But Nico, we have a lot to talk about, man. I there's a lot I want to talk about because, you know, from this podcast, man, comes a lot of information. And I think, you know, people need to know who we are out there. Yeah. And even Bahamians who listen to this podcast need to know what's going on in the arts, what it's all about, who are the persons involved right now in making it happen here in the country, because we don't have the slightest idea. Tell the audience really like who you are.
Okay.
Yeah.
So as you said, I am the daughter of E. Clement Bethel and Keva Bethel. So I have a history. My mother was an educator, and she became the first female principal and the first president of the University of the Bahamas. And my father was the first director of culture for the Bahamas. And he, between them, they exposed us to so much Bahamian and Caribbean and African arts and European as well. And laid a foundation and taught us how important that is to the creation of a people and of a country. And my brother and I have both tried to carry that on. Mm-hmm. I did it through going into government and serving as director of culture as well.
That's right.
Yeah, which is an interesting experiment and experience working within the governmental system in a country where, despite the incredible talent and ability and creative energy that Bahamians have, has no substantial government investment, infrastructure, or support for it.
It's sad.
And so, I mean, that was my hope when I became Director of Culture, to be able to build upon the foundation that actually had been left behind by my father,
right,
but which had become derelict and has now completely disappeared.
Wow.
With things like the closing of the National Dance School and other institutions. So after I left government, because, you know, I figured if I can't get things done in 5 years, that's how long a government gets to stay in.
Right.
I'm not going back to the bottom. I'm not doing the hamster on the wheel and going around and around. I decided, let's see what we could do outside. So I went back into theater and worked on Shakespeare in Paradise, which is a theater festival that we established in 2009 to build the Bahamian theater output, but also to give Bahamians exposure to world theater, classics of the world, but also to put that side by side with what we have produced, so mm-hmm. that people can see that we are as good, if not better, than the rest of the world, and we can do it all.
Yeah. Bahamians are very, very talented. I mean, amazingly so. And I don't know how we do it. And as a matter of fact, I don't know how you and Philip, your organization, get Shakespeare in Paradise done. How do you do it, man? Listen, because, I mean, people don't support the arts like that, but some people realize that the art is a necessary thing for a developing country, all right? But yet they don't want to do anything to stimulate it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what happens in the Bahamas is because we're so talented, we just take it for granted. Yeah. And we think it's just going to come out. And what used to frustrate me the most in culture was, at the beginning and end of my tenure as director, I was part of the Ministry of Youth, Sports, and Culture, right? And we don't think the same way about sports, right? People are naturally talented in sports as well, but we understand that you're supposed to invest in infrastructure and in support and in training and things like that. And granted, it may not be at the world class or the standard we would want, but the government has put a lot of investment into sporting infrastructure and sporting training and athletes and celebrating them and so on. But we don't do the parallel investment in culture. And what I always used to feel really, what I always used to say to the ministers that I worked with was, you put all this investment in sports. If you put the same investment in culture, the difference would be that you have a built-in, in sports, you have a built-in retirement age, right? It's a physical, it's something that young people do, really.
Mm-hmm.
But in culture, you can do it all your life.
Basically, yeah, absolutely.
You can die as a performer, and most people do.
Yeah.
And so just think of how much, that's three times as much you can get out of the same investment. But that has not really taken root. I don't know why. Yeah, and so Shakespeare in Paradise, how do we do it?
Yeah, how do you do it? I'm still trying.
Well, first of all, Philip and I have to do some serious negotiating, because every year we have a major fight or two, just because it takes a lot out of us. And it's a heavy lift. So what we do is we do five plays. One of them is going to be a Shakespeare. One of them is going to be a Bahamian or a Caribbean or an African or an African-American work, at least one on either side. And we like to bring in people from abroad if we can,
mm-hmm.
if we can afford it. And the whole idea is to expose young actors to Bahamian traditions, to worldwide traditions, to stretch them, to challenge them, to take away the fear that they used to have about Shakespeare. And I think we've actually done that.
Because mm-hmm.
People used to be terrified of Shakespeare, audiences and performers. And we just keep doing it. And I've noticed that we're doing it better. because, you know, you grow into it. We're doing it better, and audiences are enjoying it more, and we're getting more audiences. And some people now, like I'm seeing some young actors who are like, oh, I am doing Shakespeare. That's my thing, as opposed to I'm just going to do Bahamian stuff or whatever. So we are, so I guess because of that response, that's why we keep doing it. It has grown. We've trained actors. We've trained audiences. We have now, in the beginning, we would have to call and beg schools to send students, right? Mm-hmm. And say, you know, this is an educational event, whatever. And of course, the students love to get out off campus. So they like just coming to the theater. They didn't care what they were going to see. Now we have schools calling us and they're asking, you know, we want to get on the list because right now we're down to one small theater.
Yeah, that's hard. That's hard because I do think about that as well, in terms of space. And, you know, I think of that in terms of space and how important Shakespeare in Paradise is, especially how important what you do and what Philip does, how important that is. And you have that little space that you guys are making it work. But I feel that it really needs to happen on a grander scale. And like you said, in the beginning, I mean, I remember when, because at that time I was a teacher at CV and things were coming out about Shakespeare in Paradise and you guys were asking kids, and I remember Red sending him out. Mm-hmm. And now it's, people are talking about it.
Yeah.
Right? People are talking about
but
it.
But it's very hard, and it's hard for us to serve the government schools because the government schools have way more, we can only seat 70 students, 70 people, 70, 80 at the push in our current theater. And that, you know, the government schools basically had a fight to send 80 students.
What is happening to the Dundas itself? The Dundas, to me, a lot of persons are not, the Dundas have a history. Mm-hmm. It has a very, very interesting history. Probably you can share that with us because we have people listening to this podcast who want to know. This podcast, we hope, would also help the kids in the at the university in places, you know, they don't have to be going around. They could have just tune into the podcast, right?
Right.
So, but of late, the Dundas have, since COVID, Dundas have been closed. And I knew of the Dundas as a little boy. I didn't know where it was, but I heard about it living in Grand Bahama, of the Dundas. And but the Dundas is a very important part of a lot of aspects of our history.
Yeah.
Tell us about the history of the Dundas.
So the Dundas is the only community theater in, I think, in the Bahamas, because the Regency, which is the Grand Bahama Theater, which is an amazing space, is a private theater. But the Dundas is a community theater, which has, it's governed by a board. It was founded as a different institution, but the government, the governance of it was set up under that different institution, and it hasn't changed. So it's a nonprofit, board-run trust.
Okay.
And so it is in trust for the Bahamian people. And in this way, it is parallel in some ways to the National Trust and also to the Ranfurly Home.
Okay.
But the Dundas in the early 1960s was transformed from what it was built to be, which was a civic center. And what that meant was they were training, basically giving people skills, but they were mostly training domestics. It was like the precursor to the Hotel Training College.
Right.
Training domestics to work in people's homes and stuff like that. And then once that demand fell away, when people could move into other areas, the Dundas then became used as a performance space. And in 1960, the stage was built, and it was converted into a functional performing space. And ever since then, the Dundas has been the home of theater. And in 1975, it was transformed from like a barn-like space into a theater. The air conditioning was put in, the seating was put in. Upgrading was done to the backstage and to the foyer and so on. And it was that air conditioning unit that we had from 1975 to 1978 until 2020. And then COVID came along and shut us down for 18 months. And the air conditioning, when we started it up, they were like, we finish. It
done,
over.
Done.
50 years. Yeah. 40, however, 40, I can't remember how many years. 45 years? No. It's time to get a new one. So the air conditioning units all failed. And we have not been able to reopen the main stage, which has 330 seats.
Yeah. That is so sad. We are there. People are there. We really need help. The Dundas needs lots of help. That theater is so important for everybody. It's important to the national entities.
Mm-hmm.
It's important for everybody. And I wish people could just start to think about it, how important the arts, all aspects of it, how important it is to this country. I always had this thing. I think I shared this with you some time ago, Nico. I said I always wanted to do this a commercial that said, can you imagine a world without the arts?
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
And I did this visual thing. I always had this thing where you saw all the aspects of the arts and all of a sudden it just disappears from the screen. And then at the end of it, it lasts for a couple of minutes, and then of course it comes back on again, and it says, "I didn't think so,"
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
because it is that important.
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to do to get that theater back up and running?
So we need to put in a new air conditioning system, and it needs to be an updated air conditioning system. It has to be energy efficient,
right?
Because the air conditioning system that we had was an energy hog. And so whenever we were able to sustain ourselves and to make enough money to cover what we were doing, but a good chunk of what we were making was going right back to BPL because of how much it cost to run the air conditioning units. So we want to get something that's going to be way more energy efficient. We need to get something that is HVAC ready so that it can handle, we can open earlier than we did if we ever have another pandemic, and make it safer, make it more, I guess, just better all around. But to do that, we have to demolish some of the Dundas, because when they did the renovation, they built their air conditioning system in.
Oh.
So we got to demolish it. We have to replace it. And just to get started, we don't know how much it's going to cost altogether, but just to get started, we need $150,000. Now, last year, we were able to raise $70,000.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not enough to get started. And in order to, and you have to keep the doors open. So that money has now gone because we had to put that back into operating expenses.
Wow.
We had hoped, and we had... What can I say? The government made very encouraging noises. And they were like, how much do you need? And da-da-da-da-da-da-da. If they had been able even to match what we had raised, if they had given us the $70,000, we could have started our renovations.
Yeah.
Because we could have made that next $10,000 ourselves, right? But no. So right now we're operating a 70-seat theater, which, and you know as well as I know, you can only charge so much per ticket.
Right.
Because if you charge over a certain price, you lose your audience. And so there's a specific revenue that's fixed that comes in. 80 seats doesn't cover it. 80 seats is just not, you know, it's not sustainable. And if we cannot get the big theater up and running, the Dundas is facing closure within the next 4 years.
I sensed probably the building just started to...
Yes.
To just fall apart.
Yeah, because if you don't use it.
Right, you don't use it.
And it's a historic building.
It's a historic building.
You know, and it has trees growing out of it, and we don't even have a...
Oh, Jesus. No, man. No. This is, you know, I don't know. I don't know how your dad made a kamabash. All the persons that came before us, I don't know how they made it. I think about it, and I wonder what their frustration level was.
You know, I think it wasn't the same as ours, because they were laying a foundation. They had zero, right? But for us, we have a foundation. They laid a foundation. They already put their blood, sweat, and tears into something.
Maybe they had a bill on
it. Exactly. But what we're seeing, what we're witnessing, is that foundation just being allowed to crumble or encouraged to crumble. People are actively deciding to remove some of those institutions. You know, the Dundas is a historic building. It has a history. that is steeped in colonial, I don't even know what to call it, but colonial realities, right? Mm-hmm. It was founded, the Dundas Civic Center, which is the official and legal name of the Dundas Center for the Performing Arts, was founded in 1930 in the wake of the 1929 hurricane.
Okay.
And it was actually started where Woodcock Primary is now, or at Woodcock Primary. I'm not sure whether it operated out of Woodcock Primary, whether Woodcock Primary was actually a school there, or whether Woodcock Primary moved into the premises. I'm not sure what happened. But it was put in place to help the Over the Hill community recover from the hurricane, to teach them skills that they could then market and use to get jobs and so on. And then it moved to the space on Mackey Street. And originally, the Dundas property was twice as big as it is now. Because at some point in the 19... And that happened, it went over in the 40s. It was incorporated in the 40s. And then somewhere at the end of the 40s, half of the land was given to the Ranfurly home.
Ah, yeah.
Okay, so the land that is on the Ranfurly home is the Dundas land, or was originally the Dundas land. And then the space was built as a civic center, as I say. And then about 10 years later, there was not so much need for that training mm-hmm. that people were going to be teachers and Batelco technicians and things like that. They were not going to be serving people in their houses anymore. And so it became the theater, as I said. And it has been a cornerstone of the Bahamian, of the independent Bahamian theater scene and performing arts scene ever since. And it has never been supported by government, and it's never been supported by corporate entities. It has always been self-supporting.
That needs to change. It's very irritating to me, I must tell you, and I can only imagine your position when I think of it. I think of it as a person who's responsible for a national entity as well. And I'm sure Dexter probably feels the same mm-hmm. way, who's responsible for the National Youth Choir. Mm-hmm. But I don't understand why there aren't persons interested in getting the Dundas where it's supposed to be. Why don't they see that as important as the education institutions, the high schools and everything else? That is an important part as well. I mean, there are countries around the world, excuse me, that invest in their arts in very special ways, mm-hmm. in very delicate mm-hmm. ways, mm-hmm. because they understand the need for having those kind of institutions. If they're going to prepare stuff in the school, they need some place to display it. And, you know, they have, most countries around the world have national theaters.
Yeah. And if you want to develop something to take to the to Atlantis, you need somebody to develop it.
To develop it.
Junkanoo in Paradise did not develop at Atlantis. Junkanoo in Paradise developed at the Dundas and moved. It was commissioned and it was supposed to be performed at Atlantis, but it was auditioned and rehearsed at the Dundas first, right? Sammy Swain, all of these things, you need to be able to have an institution that can take risks and try out things and fail before you can move into other spaces, and that is what the Dundas has been.
It's been, exactly. The National Dance Company, when it began at the Dundas.
Of course. And the Dundas used to be the home of all.
All the national entities.
Yeah. And I would like it to be again at some point. Even if the Dundas had the same investment that the government gives to the other national entities, it would be great. But I wonder whether part of the issue is that government investment assumes some kind of beholdenness. I know it doesn't seem to have ever affected you. So, and it didn't really affect Cleophas either. But there seems to be this sense that if we invest in such, maybe the Dundas has been too independent. Maybe the Dundas has been too critical. You know, theater uses words, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You could listen to music and ignore the words. You could watch the dance and miss the meaning, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you're using words, people just get offended. So maybe that's the problem. Maybe we've given too much space to critics. But that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
That is what art is for. Mm-hmm. Art is supposed to be able to touch on everything. Mm-hmm. Because because it is who we are.
Yeah, it's who we are.
Yeah,
exactly. I don't know. And in this day and age, to get a theater, it costs us an arm and a leg.
It's not
available to persons like me.
It's not available to anybody. It's not available to the government of the Bahamas either. It's a cheap investment to help the Dundas get back on its feet.
Yes.
As opposed to trying to create a whole new theater, and particularly, this is probably why the Dundas will get no money, because then what I'm about to say is going to smash some coins.
That's
but
right.
Whenever I see people, governments, non-theater people, people outside of the performing arts, who are most of the people who are making these kinds of decisions, spend money on creating a performance space, they get something wrong.
Always do.
And they get something fundamentally wrong.
Always do.
To make it almost impossible to use that as they intend it to be used.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the case with the National Center for the Performing Arts. It's also the case to some degree with the Performing Arts Center of the University of the Bahamas. And it's not just unique to the Bahamas. Trinidad had the same experience. They have two big performing arts centers, and Queen's Park, when they renovated it, it was fine. It was well created. Artists helped develop it, and so it was a good space. And then they renovated it, and they destroyed all the acoustics.
Wow.
And then they created the next performing arts space, which has had to have a lot of work put into it to make it functional.
Mm-hmm. If I had anything to do with it, I think the national, the Dundas will become the national set of national
theater. Yeah.
I mean, and there's enough property there. And
There's a lot of property.
I think collectively, I'm always here. I'm always here to help. I know I've had a rough...
You're Robert Bain.
But no.
We don't hold that against you.
But I'm here, and I'm willing to do whatever I can to help the Dundas to... survive, because it's important. Yeah. I feel it in my belly.
Yeah.
It is that important. And I feel some type way, as the young people would say today, that you guys are stuck to that smaller space in the back there. That gives you, that you're so limited, you know, in scope. I had Kristen Carroll on one of my podcasts. Mm-hmm. And she was saying about the productions, and she went to see some of the work that you guys are doing at the Dundas, and how amazing it was.
Yes.
Well, I mean, that's the way it has always been. I mean, Philip and yourself, you guys are world-class directors and playwrights and people.
We are.
You know, and I don't want people to take you all lightly, but you in terms of directors and people in the arts in the Caribbean, you guys are among those persons.
Yes. I don't want to sound like we're bragging, but that's the fact. And one of the things that has happened this last year, which is so ironic that we can't move into our big space so that we can develop this, is Shakespeare in Paradise has now made a number of international connections. We were invited to speak about our festival in Prague, and also at the Globe, at Shakespeare's Globe in London.
Mm-hmm.
And we've just had an invitation for a partnership with the Orlando Shakespeare Festival.
Oh.
Who want to do exchanges, regular annual exchanges with us, bring their shows to Shakespeare in Paradise and have our shows go there. And like, what an opportunity.
That costs money.
It costs money, but Orlando is doable.
Yes.
Orlando is doable. Prague is also doable, and London isn't. But Orlando is doable. That's not as heavy a lift. And it's even in some ways Orlando... Unfortunately, because one of the things we always get is, when are we going to bring our shows to Freeport? And it would be wonderful if we could, but we're really challenged in that regard. It's a lot easier for a show that originates in Freeport to come to New Providence than it is to go the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Because the audience in New Providence is exponentially bigger than the audience in Grand Bahama.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And to cover the cost of taking a show to Grand Bahama, you can do that if you bring it to New Providence, but to cover a show to go to Grand Bahama.
You've experienced that.
You know what I mean.
Yes,
you know exactly
yes,
what I mean.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. It really is difficult, and it's a shame, because we would love to have much more interchange because the Regency is also a significant theater. Mm-hmm. But it's very difficult. But to say that, it's probably actually more cost effective to take a show to Orlando because they have the audience.
Right.
They have the support. They have the...
And they have means of writing, getting grants.
Grants,
and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because exactly. I want people to know it's not easy to have, even so, you say Orlando being doable. It's that also is at a cost.
It is.
Because I could tell you, for example, when we did the Ailey thing here in Nassau, we brought in the Ailey Company a couple of years ago. Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, no, bringing stuff in is expensive. You know, everybody knows, you know what it costs to live in Nassau. You know what it costs to accommodate people in Nassau.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
You
know? But yeah, we need to. But I would, in my brain, in my head, I've always, I would like to see an organization other than the Ministry of Culture, other than whomever. I would like to see it happen. People do it. Mm-hmm. Doctors work together. Mm-hmm. Lawyers mm-hmm. work together. Mm-hmm. Architects work together in this country, and the artists don't work together. And what I'm saying is that I would like to see an organization that actually sits and plans and organize and figure out how this thing can work. Because I think right now, things are everywhere in the mm-hmm, country, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm. And everything needs to be pulled into
a home.
To pull into one place, you know? And people like my Grammy say, you gotta be able to want to be ruled. Mm-hmm. Well, you have to be ruled. And so which means that everybody that's pulled in that place cannot be a leader. There's somebody mm-hmm, that has to be mm-hmm, a leader. Mm-hmm. And but hopefully the whoever's who's doing this will do it for the greater good. People in Junkanoo do it.
Yeah. I think the Dundas could be that space because it
I think
is
so too.
Because that's what it's created for. It is a community theater. It is everything that we make there is invested back into the property. At this point in time, we don't make enough to pay a staff, and that's why the Dundas is stuck.
You all tried that some time ago, eh?
You know, when the main theater was open, we were able to pay 2 full-time staff, but you need more. You need that investment to begin. Once you have more staff, the problem that I think we have in the artistic community and why the visual artists may be better placed to have that kind of collective than the rest of us and the performing artists is most of us performing artists have to work full-time somewhere else.
Absolutely.
And who has the energy, right? You want to create, you have to work, then what's left over for the creation of that working together? People, you understand, but if we could get a few people at a space like the Dundas, like I say, which is in trust for the Bahamian people, there for the performing arts, just organizing those things, there's all kinds of things that we need. We need like group health insurance for artists. Mm-hmm. You need, there's all kinds of things that you can do as a cooperative. But without that space, without that organization, that institution, we can't even get off the ground.
I think, I remember many years ago when the Dance Theatre of Harlem was under a lot of pressure. The company was, everybody was put off for a while. Mm-hmm. They had to develop a development committee, mm-hmm. so to speak. And the development committee, what they were, before things began again, what they had to do was they got a group of people together, persons came together, and tried to plan the way ahead, mm-hmm. what it would look like, say, in the next 10 years, next 20 years. And so, and while they were there, they were actually finding ways to raise funds on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And I think possibly that's probably one of the things that need
I
to happen.
I think that's a great idea.
Because persons out there are capable people out there that's interested in helping, but you need to pull on them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, it's not the artist that you probably need to be on this committee.
No, I know. No, you're right.
Because I discovered this myself. even with the Ailey thing, when I brought the Ailey Company here, I had one dancer on the committee. because we found that, and like Mr. Vincent Saunders used to say, the late Vincent Saunders used to say, that you dancers are very barbaric to each other. Right? But, you know, but I understand what he was saying. And so what I did was I got people, persons, who had no clue of what it is that they really needed to do, and they depended on me to give them the instructions. But they came in with the eagerness of wanting to help. They love sitting in the theater. They love going to New York and watching a production. They love going to England and watching a production. But they did not know, for them, it was the first time. So they came in there, and I said, we need to raise $135,000. And they go like, oh, we could do that.
I need to know how you found that committee. Right. We need to bring you on to help us. Because we need 150 just to start. We probably need $250,000 to $500,000 to get the thing back up and running properly. But once you start, you can build the momentum. You can build as you go. But we just got to be able to get back in that space.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's part of the development. Development aspect of the Dundas that need to be separate and apart right now, and that needs to be worked out like that, so you can possibly start developing the theater again. But in the meantime, the Dundas really need to be open and functioning, even if it's on a very small basis or something, because if that building is left like that for too long,
it's deteriorating. It's just falling apart.
And I want to impress upon people out there that may be listening to this podcast, wherever you are, we can always use your help here in the Bahamas. We have great talents here. We have great talents in the arts, in terms of the theater, dancers, actors, everybody. They're here. Not as prominent as in some countries like America or Britain or some places around the world, but they are here and they're waiting for the opportunity. There are lots of possibilities here in the Bahamas. But one of the things that we would like to impress upon right now is we have a theater that actually needs some love, and we need to get it functioning. We need to have the theater available to more persons out there. And so if you listening to this podcast, you know, please, you know, we could use your help. You need to contact Nicolette Bethel and Philip Burrows.
Yeah. So, I mean, if we have a website called dundascenter.org, which is probably the easiest way if people are outside of the country want to get in touch with us. So if you go to dundascenter.org, you can contact us through that website. We also have a Facebook page. We also have a Shakespeare in Paradise Facebook page. Shakespeare in Paradise is the most active of all of our things because the festival is something that people can feel, but the Dundas does have a web page, and the Dundas also has a Facebook page.
So what plays are being done this year?
So finally, I say this with great trepidation. The anchor Shakespeare that we're doing is Hamlet.
Okay.
50-50.
Okay.
And so 50-50 means that we're doing an adaptation that doesn't change the language significantly, except in very crucial moments. But instead of Hamlet having his 7 soliloquies and being on stage all the time and getting very tiresome, as sometimes I find Hamlet can do, the adapters have divided his speeches and the action up so that they've made certain women more prominent. So it's 50-50. So it's 50% Hamlet and 50% other women. So Horatio is his cousin, and Horatio is Lady Horatio. She's female. I mean, she's a woman. His mother, rather than being married to the king, is actually the queen.
Mm-hmm.
And the adapters said, you know, Queen Elizabeth I was on the throne when Shakespeare wrote Hamlet. Why didn't he model Queen Gertrude on Queen Elizabeth? So they did. And then they've done certain things like giving Ophelia the most important speech ever in Shakespeare. Okay. She gets to do To Be or Not to Be.
Oh!
Which is actually a speech about suicide, yes. And she does commit suicide. So it has a different significance, but it's the same story. So we're doing Hamlet. We are also doing short tales. And short tales is one of the most, I mean, we've done a lot of experiments in Shakespeare in Paradise, and it's one of the things that, it's like a sleeper. It's one of the things that I think is the most effective of that we've done. It's an incubator for new talent. So we put out a call and we ask for people to write short plays, mm-hmm. and then we read them and we pick the 10 best and we produce them in a single evening. And then we also bring in new actors. This is the way they come in. But we also train new directors. So last year when we did our Year of Bahamian Theater, which was one different play by a different Bahamian playwright every month for 13 months, we had 14 directors that we had trained through short tales.
Okay. Say more about short tales again. Yeah.
So short tales, we established it in 2018. We've always wanted to be an incubator for new Bahamian talent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what I also wanted to break was there's a lot of people who are doing their own stuff, but how can I say it? It's all similar. It's all very much the same. It's relationship driven, and that's fine. But there's so much more. Like the Bahamian theatrical tradition covers so much more. It's either relationship driven or it is satirical and skits and politically driven, right?
Yeah.
But there's so much more. So what we wanted was we called for Bahamian plays. And the first set of 10 that we selected was so amazing. Like what people were looking at and writing about. They did science fiction and they did fantasy and they did historical fiction. And they did, you know, they did plays of every kind. And so ever since then, we have the same kind of thing. They deal with all kinds of things that you wouldn't talk about. In our first year, we had a play about a gay relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, was written by a Bahamian.
Mm-hmm.
We've had plays about the swimming pigs.
Mm-hmm.
We had a play that foregrounded the swimming pigs. We had a play about a couple plays about psychopathic murderers. We have plays about inheritance and funerals, and we haven't had one about a wedding yet. That's interesting. But Bahamians are writing and seeing the world in so many cool and amazing ways. And that's what Short Tales puts out there. So we have the writers, we feature their plays, and then we put out an anthology every year. Then we have widespread auditions because we can, if you're a young actor, you can come on stage for 10 minutes and not have too much of a burden to bear.
Right?
And we also give you people who are interested in directing the opportunity to direct. And they're overseen by people who have more experience. And then we bring it all together in a single evening. And like I said, when we went to do the Year of Bahamian Theater, I said, Philip, you and me and Aaron, we're not going to be. So we went into it with five directors, Philip Burrows, myself, Aaron Knowles, Marcel Sherman, and Skibo Roberts. And we did the Year of Bahamian Theater with 14 different directors.
That's awesome.
That was, it blew my mind.
Yeah, that's awesome. See, there's so much. I just wished, you know, somebody said, I think it was one of my parents here at this school. They said, you know something? Give the artists, they refer to you all. They refer to Philip and Nico and Robert Bain. And they said, give them what they want and see what you're going to get.
If people gave us a fright, we're not even asking for that much, right? Like let me not get started. I don't want to give us a parallel, but you know, people give so much to Junkers.
Yes, yes.
Right? If you gave us a tenth of that,
mm-hmm.
what would we do?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Somebody said that, and I was like, I said, really? I said, yeah, you know, but I said, we'll see if that happens. You know, we'll see what happens. But I'm really so much interested in the seeing the Dundas back on his feet again. You know, how could persons get tickets and stuff for
Shakespeare in Paradise? So there are two ways. You can either call.
And give us the dates as well.
Okay, so Shakespeare in Paradise opens on the 23rd of September and closes on the 12th of October.
Okay.
And we have a show every night except for Sunday nights. We are also this year featuring Nassau Rock, which is the animated film, because a lot of the artists in Nassau Rock also designed posters for us. Because Shakespeare in Paradise, every year, for each of our plays, we have a different show poster made by a Bahamian artist.
Right.
And so Maz, Jasheen, and Stephen Catalano, they're the two that come to mind, who are both some of the animators in Nassau Rock, and they've done posters for us, and are doing posters for us again. So even on Sundays, because I think we have Nassau Rock scheduled for a Sunday as well. So we are performing all of those. You can get your tickets by calling the Dundas after noon. It's not open in the morning, but between noon and 6, you can call and book tickets. But we also have an online ticket agent.
Okay.
Ticket Tailor is where we go. We don't use Eventbrite anymore. We go to Ticket Tailor because Eventbrite gave us a narrow range of options for payment, whereas okay. Ticket Tailor will, you can pay by bank transfer,
okay.
by credit card, by PayPal.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, go to our Shakespeare in Paradise Facebook page. You'll find out much more about it. A big mail out is about to go out this weekend. Yeah, and tickets are $35. People who have been coming to the Black Box for a couple of years should be pleased to know that we have reconfigured the Black Box so that all of the seats you buy, all of the tickets you buy in advance are going to be comfort seats. We're
okay.
not going to run out.
Okay.
All right. Overflow seating, we can't guarantee there'll be comfort seats, but everything that you'll be able to buy in advance is going to be a comfort seat.
Okay.
So $35 is the ticket price.
That's not a bad price. I mean, it's a little more, but
it's a little more, yeah.
Yeah, but you'll go for that, yeah. I don't get that sometimes though, because we would spend.
We'll spend $100,000
to go see a play someplace else.
Oh yeah, or just to go to a concert at the port.
Yeah,
or to go to Atlantis.
Yes, but
not to mention valet parking and dinner
absolutely.
And all the rest of
we
it.
We don't never. Yeah, we don't. As a matter of fact, I would like to say also that Nico is also, she wrote the foreword for my book, Profiles, Bahamian Dance, The Dance and the Dancers. So if you haven't gotten a copy of that yet, it's at Chapter 1 and our logos.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, or you can have one at the studio. Come here to the studio in Nassau Street. But Nico, this has been like amazing. I'm just happy.
I was just able to come.
I just wanted you to talk a bit more on the Dundas because I don't think people really know exactly the state of it because people ask me about it.
Yeah.
And I tell them I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. I at one point I said, well, probably I don't know, termites or something. I don't know.
Termites was a part of it, but that was one of our corporate sponsors. As soon as Struckum for heard, they came and they tented it for us. But
super.
But you know, there's a lot more. There's a lot of other stuff that has to be done. The roof, as you know, because you've been dancing in there. The roof for the last 25 years has been in need of repair. And then during one of the blows, the roof of the men's bathroom got damaged because a tree fell on it, and we haven't been able to even to effect those repairs, much less. You know, it's a big job, but it is worth it.
Well, tell me, so what now would be your ideal?
So you mean the ideal for us? We have a plan for that whole space. We see three theaters.
Okay.
We have two now.
Mm-hmm.
One obviously is not functioning, but we see three theaters: the indoor theater, the 330 seat theater of the main Dundas, the 70 seats in the Black Box, and we are designing, we have designed, and would like to start building an amphitheater, an outdoor theater
in the back.
Named after James Catlin.
Oh, super.
Yeah.
Super.
And so that is our next goal. And then in the very far back, because there's a lot of property there, we would like to build an administration building, which would have rehearsal spaces and administration spaces. And if I get my way, although, you know, it's an extra cost, and even studio apartments, so we could bring in artists, directors, residencies, and so on, so that we could offer that there. Mm. And we would like to use the front. People will probably remember that during COVID, when nothing else could open, there was the Tinfoil had a lot of food being offered there.
Right.
We have since parted ways for a number of reasons, but the main reason was that Tinfoil was just too big for the theater and the food park to
to
continue together.
Right.
And so we tried to contain it, and that wasn't, they were too big for that. So they needed a lot. And we have an area that we would want to designate and actually create as a...
The stuff you probably need recommend
for truck. Is, it's, you know, Robert... Oh yeah, come in. Yeah, they need to. That would have, they would have to, because the security, you know, that that was part of the issue that we found, is that the security, we, which is fine. It's a green space. It's a public space. Security issue. So we're still developing. If we could find the investors.
What? Somebody call that the orange?
Yeah. The orange economy is fully existing, but it has no investment in the Bahamas.
It has been existing forever.
Yes, but no investment, so it cannot flourish. It is, the orange economy is one of the most elastic and one of the most vibrant areas of the global economy, right? But in order for you to take advantage of that as a nation, you have to make an investment. It doesn't just happen. You can't expect me to be working 9 to 5 or to be working full time at another institution and to behave and to produce at the level that I can produce if I was working full time in the orange economy.
Yeah.
It just don't work.
Yeah.
You need to be able to put enough money in so that I could leave my job. I mean, I like my job at the University of the Bahamas, but so I could leave my job and go to another job and spend my full time working on that. That's what you need to be investing in.
Yes, yes.
People are doing this stuff in their spare time.
Yeah.
And this is how good we are.
Wow.
Imagine if we were doing it in our full time.
We are amazing people. I love this country.
Yep. I like the country.
People always ask me. I know. Right? I know, right? Yeah. I like home. My little piece of plot of land. But Nico, this has been interesting. I just hope we can do this again and probably talk about some other things. But
sure.
I just wanted people to know what was happening with the Dundas, what was happening down on Mackey Street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but like I say, you know, I mean, what is happening there? I feel it in my belly, and it needs to. It something needs to happen to bring that back to life. And there are lots of ideas, lots of things. I'm here, man.
You go ahead.
Because you know, one thing I learned too, people, us in the arts, I was always told that we need to stay away from certain things when it come to raising money and doing stuff, because we look at it a little differently than most people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why those persons I told you about, they looked at it differently. They mm-hmm. didn't look at it the way we looked mm-hmm. at it. And so, and I learned. And one thing I learned from working with those persons, they taught me a lesson. And I remember one evening I was told to manage my expectations. Matter of fact, that was a lesson I learned from your dad as well, a long time ago. And I remember when I first came here and I was kind of complaining because I realized that I was at a different spot, different level as everybody else. And he said, you know, allow people to come to you. Do not allow yourself to be pulled down.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody...
Yeah, set the standard and people will come to it.
Yeah. So if people think that I'm uppity, blame it on Clement Bethel. But I understood what you
said. Excellence requires something.
Yes.
Yes. I agree. And I think, I mean, you set the standard and then you provide people with the ability to rise to it. That's what we've done with Short Tales, right?
Yeah.
We set the standard and people are hungry to reach it. That's the whole idea of doing Shakespeare, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, you do ballet, you understand, right? It's like, I feel as though one of the legacies of the colonial history is that we were told as people, you cannot do this. This is beyond your capacity.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot be a ballet dancer. You cannot do Shakespeare because, you know, these are just beyond your ability.
Right.
And on some level, we have all internalized that and believed that at one moment or another. And my whole thing is, that's a lie. So let's show them it's a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, and maybe I got this because I happened to be in university when Wynton Marsalis was doing that as a jazz musician. And people were like, oh, jazz musicians, but you know, but he's not classical. So he did like 2 or 3 years where he only performed some of the most difficult classical music at the top level.
It's amazing, man.
I remember going to his classical concerts and I was like, yeah, you see? And because his whole idea was jazz is harder than classical, right? Mm-hmm. It just is. But I can just show you that I can do classical.
Listen, the introduction to CBS thing on Sunday morning is his trumpet riff, thing he plays.
Yes. And so from him and just watching him do that, I was like, okay, yeah, that's what we have to do. We just have to go in and master Shakespeare and then people understand that we can do Shakespeare
too. Well, you guys have been doing an amazing job. I am impressed by that. And every time somebody asks me about it, it just seems like it's just something amazing. And they talk about it. And I have a friend who's a thespian that normally goes to anything that happens there. As a matter of fact, she's an English teacher, and she always goes and she always calls and she goes, I went to see this play at Shakespeare in Paris. This one is happening. I got to go and see this one.
I'm you know? So happy.
Yeah. So you have people like that and who actually appreciates exactly what you are doing. So Nico, I want to thank you, man, for being a part of this podcast. But I would like for us to get together again at some point and talk about some, I guess, the
strategies.
Well, I want to talk a bit more about the arts socially. The social aspects. You know, because there's so much. But I want to thank you for coming on Tea and
thank
Talk.
Thank you.
This is good.
Yes, this is good.
Yeah, this is good.
And you will be hearing from us, Robert, because you got some connections. You got some passion. We need everybody to come on board now because it's getting critical. It's getting to a point where, you know, it literally will die. We will close, and that would be the biggest tragedy ever, because, yeah, it's a success. The Dundas is a success story because it's been in existence as a theater for 54 years, and has never had government investment.
Wow. Well, on that note, we need to make a change. This is 2024, and for those of you listening out there, you got it, and you got it here from Tea and Talk. Well, like I said, this podcast is emanating from Nassau, Bahamas, one of the islands of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. We boast of 700 islands. 30 of them are inhabited by beautiful people. You can come down anytime and just have a whirl of a good time. The food, the atmosphere, it's beautiful here. We got beautiful people. So until the next time, thank you for listening, and you're listening to Tea and Talk coming from Nassau, Bahamas. You're listening to the podcast Tea and Talk.
The views and opinion expressed in this podcast are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of any entity or organizations.